What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Lap B. Another week in the books. We definitely have girls and women all up in our minds. I don't know if you guys ended up catching that boxing match over the weekend. I didn't. I was definitely watching UFC Anthony Smith versus Hector Lombard during that. It was much more of exciting of a fight, but if you know anything about boxing, you know how corrupt it's been. We've talked about it here for a while, and the girl we want to highlight is Adelaide Byrd. Adelaide Byrd was the one judge for that fight that has caused all the controversy over the weekend. Unless you've been living under a rock, you know what happened. One judge had the fight 15-13 for Triple G. The other judge had 14-14 draw. And Adelaide Byrd had 18-110, which there's no way in hell either one of those fighters deserved that type of a scorecard. And I feel like that's why so many people are up in arms about this. And who was it? Teddy Atlas had a stroke on air. He didn't really have a stroke, but he ended up having pretty much an aneurysm. Did you see him talking about all of this lately, by the way?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of him.
Or boxing in general anymore. I mean, what is there to good to say out of this last weekend for boxing?
As much as you don't want to say anything about Mayweather-McGregor, that fight built up this fight. That fight gave more viewing eyes to this fight and more mouths talking about this fight than normally would have been. This was the fight, and this was the fight kind of that all boxing fans were like, psh, McGregor Mayweather, that ain't shit. That ain't even real. That's bullshit. That fight is bullshit. You want to see a real boxing fight? Wait. Just wait. Just wait till Triple G Canelo. Just wait, just wait, just wait. We get there. We see an okay fight. It's okay.
Yeah, it's
okay. If that's your two best, it's okay. There's some moments, but I feel like the more, like, damn moments you actually have to give to Canelo. Like,
he had the harder shots. Right.
but to get to that point and regard, you know, have everybody sees it. Everybody has the same eyes. They see it. And it's corrupt. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we watch. If it's that corrupt,
yeah, agreed,
that it goes to a draw.
A lot of people are saying that the reason it's a draw is because they want to set up the second match. But regardless, when you have these caliber of fighters, you're going to have two fights to see who gets the best two out of three. And if it goes 1-1, then you get the third fight, and it's better. That.
You get half the amount of eyes on it next time. Unless
it's a close fight. If it would have been 115-113 for Triple G or Canelo, all three on the scorecards, I could see a secondary fight coming up because that's a close fight. But if it's an 18-10, that's too much of a blowout.
Another fight will happen for them. The suck part about the next fight happening is they'll both fight other people. And we might see Triple G fight again this year. We will not see Canelo fight again this year. Because he's the bigger draw in boxing.
From what I heard, maybe.
I just think he usually only fights twice a year. And so I would...
Did you hear the speculation as of recent, though, with Canelo and his next potential opponent? Conor McGregor.
I don't know who's saying that or how many
Joe Rogan's saying that, and so are other underground in the know supposed
people. Say 1,000% there's no way that happens.
I fucking hope not.
It doesn't happen
I
at
hope
all.
Not.
And I think Joe Rogan, he might have some inside information as far as Dana's concerned, but I just really think, I don't think Conor would take that fight. It's stupid. It's stupid for Conor to take that fight.
The points that I saw for that fight was that it is another multi-million dollar match for him, where in the UFC you might make $3-5 million. With Canelo, it is a $30-50 million.
Guess how much Canelo made for his fight?
$8.2 million.
Five.
Oh shit. That's so
Guess
minuscule.
How much Triple G made?
Three.
Yeah. So
wow.
Big fucking deal. Conor probably made what, 40 to fight the fight, and then after it was all said and done, 110-120 million. UFC can easily match 5 million. Conor made more than that to fight Nate. Whatever Canelo's bringing to the table. Conor can get more eyes on him on a UFC match than Canelo brings to the table. Canelo can't get 300,000 eyes on him in a pay-per-view.
It also could
Connor can bring that regardless of who he fights. He's about to have another sit-down.
Right. That's what I was about to say. He could be using this as leverage and be saying, he just puts it out there because it automatically makes...
He doesn't even put it out there. Joe Rogan just picks dumb shit. And the fight he always says he wants to see, like he keeps bringing up, I want to see Nick Diaz versus Connor. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I agree.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't want to see that at all. I'm kind of a, like, just shut up about boxing. Stop being that guy. Stop trying to be the guy that just puts a wrench in... to the mix. I want a real opinion on it, and I just think that's a silly fucking fight for both fighters. Both fighters. It doesn't make... Because to me, Canelo still has potential of being the greatest of all time. Like, if he plays everything right, he has like the draw to Triple G, he lost. But he's still a young fucking dude. He has a huge legacy behind him. He's still a power puncher. He puts people to sleep in that division of boxing. He makes a division of boxing that's usually boring pretty exciting. He has that, like, Pacquiao intensity about him, which is young Pacquiao. Triple G, if they fight again a year and a half, Triple G's an old man. Triple G's an old man next time they fight. It's just not the same fight.
Yeah, I agree. I know we definitely are an MMA-based show, but hey, this has been one of the best years boxing has had in a long, long
this
time.
This is probably going to be the last time we fucking talk about boxing on the show. And it sucks that it's this way. This is the most amount of eyes they would have got on him. The same way we say, well, Connor, all the people he's going to bring over for his next fight, they say, oh, the first fight back for UFC. No, it's Connor's first fight back in UFC will be the amount of eyes that are over. That's when they'll see how many boxing fans they brought over. So this was the fight that they got to see. They might have 500,000. They might have 1 million buys. If they're going to see how many UFC fans they brought over. And UFC fans, they watch a fight that they're like, okay, maybe I can get down with this corrupt-ass decision like that.
Oh, yeah.
Corrupt. That we don't see corruption in the UFC, but not to that level.
They are some of the same judges. Some of the same judges.
And I have to say this, too. That fucking dude that did the draw to me, the even score.
Right.
He's equally as corrupt. He just had to figure out a more clever way to do it.
It wasn't so blatant.
Yes. Like, he's the better actor when Oscar De La Hoya went off to the side and needed to pay off judges.
I don't think that the 14, I think that's controversial, but as I said before, nowhere nearly as bad in that. The judge, Adelaide Byrd, as we're saying, the corruption in boxing, she has judged in MMA. Throwing that out there. And she was actually up on the 216 card, which she was just recently scratched from, like that referee was out of Canada. She has been taken off of judging for the 216 pay-per-view. I love it. Thank you very much, UFC.
Thank you.
Keep that shit out of here.
Yeah, and I'd be interested in looking up every other fight that she judged for the UFC, because we'd be able to tell with
what's going on.
Skeptical eyes. We'd be like,
right.
Oh, really? Did they just get Adelaide Byrd?
Who is wife of the commissioner, whatever, Byrd, and guess what? She got married and was like, oh, can I be a judge, honey? And he's like, yeah, go right ahead. And people that really love the sport and understand what's going on are like, there's my position. There's my Phil, this guy's wife, that there's been tweets going around or memes going around everywhere of Adelaide Byrd at one point in time saying she's clinically blind legally. Have you seen that running around?
I am furious. There has to be a better way the judges are picked. There has to be a tiered way of point system based on your cards where professionals sit down and watch the entire thing in slow motion afterward,
right.
And the better judges get the better...
Just like the American judicial system, which we don't get into this much, but once that judge gets that spot, they ain't fucking giving it up unless they're taken out. Unless they are, they're not just going to step away from becoming a judge. Once you're a judge, you're like, wow, I have all the power. I make all the rules. Like,
you're the judge.
The judge. It's so insidious. And I really like that UFC has made openly made points in already taking people like this off of it, and hopefully it lets other judges know, like, people are starting to get onto your shit. If you get an extra, and Teddy Atlas was saying this in his outburst, there was a judge who never got caught, but the public knew, all of a sudden after a fight on Monday, got a $30,000 deposit into their bank account. How is that not the most corrupt thing you ever heard in your goddamn life? A judge getting paid any more than they needed to, for whatever reason. Unbelievable.
You know this shit happens and I'm over it. What's the point of having USADA, WADA, all these testing, make the fighters jump through flamed hoops to then have it all squashed because of... And it all... Follow the money. You gotta follow the money.
It's the truth, and you'll always see what happens. So, getting into the post-fight show of Rockhold Branch, it was... an iffy fight card. There were some good finishes. There were some really boring fights. But some just key points that ended up sticking out. UFC.
Philadelphia. Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania 116. UFN 116. Steeltown. Yeah. Pittsburgh. Pennsylvania.
Pittsburgh. UFC Pittsburgh. That's what it was. So we Hashtag UFC Pittsburgh.
So we ended up starting the night with a knockout in the second round versus... Jason Sago, which there was another fight that we didn't cover that fell out. There was like 5-6 fights that fell out this night, so we didn't even get a fight pass. They just went right into the Fox Sports 2, whatever. But that was Sago's more than likely going to get one more try and then be out of the UFC. And Burns, like we were saying, as an underachiever, not going to be putting too much money. This knockout came, I think it was due to conditioning more, and I've just really seen Burns... not abilities just never get there. He has all the capability and he took a lot of damage. And this fight, as dramatically as it finished, was a really close fight up until that finish came. Sago was really giving Burns a hard time. I think people have figured him out. Anything you remember about that specifically that you wanted to throw in there?
No.
Uriah Hall ended up knocking out Jutko in a fight that he was a 10-8, if not 10-7 first round. Uriah Hall... needs to get his ground game better. It was because they stood up in the second round. They stand in neutral position at the beginning of every round. But if that fight would have kept going for another 30 seconds in that first round, Jutko would have got a TKO. And it was a dramatic knockout. I think people...
A huge fan of Hall. I still will watch him skeptical going forward. But the other thing about Jutko... he's a one-and-done fighter. You can't be that anymore. He's a one-round, and that's it. He always blows his wad in the first round, and sometimes it gets him a finish. I just don't think you can play that way anymore in the UFC.
I think specifically that that extra blistering style that Jutko put on the first round was exactly what Derek Brunson did, and what he did was not let Hall get his range, but as soon as Hall got his range in the second round, night-night.
Boop!
Yep, and Uriah Hall did save my night, though. He helped me cash because he was so cheap and he had that TKO finish that we talked about. I had him on a bunch of cards and it paid off.
Veteranship.
Yeah, exactly. It really paid off. So that was a good pick if you followed Lat B. If you didn't subscribe and listen to the show, now's your chance. Now's your chance. So moving on to the next fight. This is a guy that we both were so goddamn scared to put on most of our cards. And I put him on some, put Spitz on a couple more, and Spitz came through. You totally had a wonderful pick on this. Big underdog for you.
Spitz. I like Spitz.
First punch of the night, though, or first punch, first engagement they had, he threw a right.
And I know for you, you were over. Like, I still am, you're iffy on him going forward, but I was just watching Tate. He just looks so much more conditioned.
He leaned out so much more than his last one, yeah.
Than his last fight.
Yep.
And I feel like he is one of the guys, he did take the fight on short notice, but he's been waiting to take this fight on short notice. And I think you brought it up in podcast past, and really, if you're going to get into the UFC and make a name for yourself, if you have high hopes of being the next Conor McGregor, you have to be ready to take that fight on short notice because you could get a big name
and then have a championship fight all of a sudden or co-main event somewhere else. Yeah, I agree.
Spitz Hamilton was a pretty big name.
Oh yeah, he definitely is a stepping stone. Spitz, it's going to be fun to see his next fights, but Hamilton. Moving on. Sorry.
I wish we had if we had a soundboard right now, which this is what else I was thinking, just for shit.
Uh-huh.
When we're setting up the new studio, a soundboard, we can go back to our old shows and record some of our sound bits for like the breakdown.
Air horns.
Yeah, and all that shit. We can put it in our current shows, but one I would like to have a clip that says, get out of here, when we're done with a fighter.
Moving on. I love that line.
Get out of here.
All right, so the next fight of the night was Aubin Mercier versus Tony Martin. Split decision in my eyes. It was super close either way. Tony Martin's wrestling really looked good. Both of their striking fairly rudimentary. I feel like this was the peak of Aubin Mercier. I don't think he can go too much higher in caliber of fighter.
I agree with you.
And do really well. He hasn't moved on to that next level, and he has no power. It's all ground game, and once ground guys that are elite really start to get in there, high-level wrestlers, Tony Martin isn't that high level and really gave him a lot of trouble. I just see him be cautious with both these guys. I think this is kind of where they're going to stay. I don't necessarily see him where Mercier had such potential, but...
I feel like Martin, I think we have more to see from him because I think he stifled Mercier, and I think he won the fight.
I thought it was a split decision too, Martin, as well. I agree. I did have Martin on a couple cards.
And I'm a huge Aubin Mercier fan, but I agree. I think we have seen him capped. I do think they're both so young. If they change camps and expand, Aubin Mercier would need to maybe go to an Eddie Bravo.
A new gym. That's exactly what I would suggest.
Something totally different.
Well. Yep.
And I think Martin's. Maybe something, I thought his ground game looked tight against Aubin Mercier.
Yeah, I agree. His conditioning was on point.
Yeah, I think it was a tough fight. I think he just needs to maybe go to elevation, go to somewhere high, and just push it to the next level so he can have round. I don't know. He looked good to me in that fight. I thought he stifled somebody who's also a good fighter who's going to stifle a lot of other guys.
Yep.
So I think we called it on the cast that it could be...
A super boring ground game. And that's exactly what happened. So I actually had Martin on a few because he was like 7-2, 7-3. He was so cheap. And he went to decision. So he was worth every penny. He helped me on my DK plays. Moving on to one of the pricier fighters of the night on DK, we had Justin Ledet defeating Anuwe Zulu.
And I'm going to have to tell you one more thing. We have new recording equipment from the hurricane, so bear with us, everyone. We have to try to stay in the green so we don't blow out to the yellow.
Oh, good to know. Good to know. All right. So with Ledet beating Zulu in a 3-round decision, I've really been hyping Ledet a lot, and I really didn't like his performance because he could have went for the kill many, many more times, and he sat back like a boxer and was like, well, I'm just going to win a decision, which this is point fighting at its finest, makes for a very boring decision. He had Zulu hurt in many positions, but Zulu had that overhand right that was heavy, and in the heavyweight division, everybody has that right. So Ledet is just somebody who's not going to be the biggest DK play. He's had a couple finishes, but they were because they were opportunistic. They weren't that he ever went in for the kill. They were just kind of there in a shitty double leg takedown and then back
Ledet
conditioning.
Ledet versus Spitz.
I like that fight. But I'm saying Ledet, he's going to be a heavy favorite most of the time, and he's not going to be worth his DK money.
I agree with you.
At 9-3, no way. It's just overpriced for him.
I'm thinking Ledet versus Spitz, I'm going to take Spitz.
Spitz,
as my
just because he's going to be your... Yeah. I think Ledet wins that fight right now, but I think the DK money line would be on Spitz.
I wish I could have sold you on Spitz, because Spitz would have been a perfect...
I put Spitz on a bunch of DK cards, but yeah. That chin's gone for Hamilton. That heavyweight division. All right, moving on. We had Kamaru Usman defeating Sergio Moraes in a first round TKO. Usman is a monster. Monster.
He building seven to that shit.
It was.
he collapsed it in its footprint.
His ground game and striking alike have been coming along. You got a contender at the 170-pound division in Usman, and there's not many people calling him out for a reason. Complete domination. I have nothing but good things to say. Usman all the way, and...
Who do you want to see Usman? Where does Usman go? Any way he wants, but...
Yeah, I agree.
What do you want to see? I think that we can kind of get into this a little bit for the division. So we had the call-out, which we're totally going to get into for Mike Perry, but it's all in the same division for Robbie Lawler. What about Usman Condit, or is that too dangerous for Carlos
to come back to? And Condit just said... Give me a fight, Sean Shelby. Did you see that Twitter earlier today?
That's right. I thought it was a good thing to go into.
The only thing I would say with Condit is stay away from this Usman fight because he's coming off such of a layoff. And we know Carlos Condit don't got the best ground game. Like, guys are up. And this guy has way too good of a ground game. I think that's actually a pretty easy fight for Usman. And Condit has nothing to gain from
this? This was a Lesbo and the Bean. Follow us on Twitter @LesboandTheBean. You would have seen this tweet. Carlos Condit versus Cowboy Cerrone.
Oh, all day. But that fight's already booked with Till.
What the? I know. Don't even, Cowboy, you don't.
Yeah, a 205er.
I love you, Cowboy. You do not need to do that fight.
Yeah, I agree. Fallout. Say you had too many Budweisers the week
I think Cowboy Condit for UFC
all
fans,
day.
That's a super fight.
And it's a veteran fight. Like, a lot of
you
the old school fans are like,
UFC
that could have happened 5 years ago, and it would have been a headline pay-per-view fight. And now it's just a co-main event. But I love that fight. That would be a hell of a fun fight.
And I think you can put Lawler versus Perry on the same card and set up for the winner versus winner, loser versus loser for fights to come. Uh-huh. You got to set up stories like this, UFC management. You have to start setting up stuff. You got to think about how you're going to build the entertainment storyline factor of the fight. Because look at the Jones-DC storyline and how important that was to play out for those UFC pay-per-view numbers.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people want to see. And the sad part is diehards want to see DC fight, but to get those extra fans to come in, they want to watch Jones versus DC fight. They want to watch Jones fight.
Yep.
And they don't want to watch Jones fight anyone else as much as Jones versus DC.
I'd agree with that.
They make money together.
So for Usman, I'd say anybody in the top eight. I think he's past that even. I don't know if he's ranked right now. I don't think he's ranked.
I bet he is
in the top 15.
Eight. He
that's what I'm saying. His challenge up in that top eight. I don't think he's top five because he just hasn't fought that caliber of fighter yet. But he's right there. He's showing us that he's working towards that.
Who can he looks fight in great. Who's even going to take that fight?
That's what I'm saying. People don't want that fight. That's where it's tough for him. He's going to have somebody be willing to dance with him. And there's a lot of guys in that division that are like, I'm just going to worry about the paycheck, hence the champ. And all that stuff. But, I mean, even the champ, T-Wood versus Usman, that's good wrestling. That's a fight. But that's, I want Usman to gain a little bit more against higher caliber because that's a big step from who he's fighting now to the champ. Moving on to the next fight, we had Gregor Gillespie defeating Jason Gonzalez via submission in round two. Gregor Gillespie, he was worth a lot on DK, but he came through with ton of punches, ton of takedowns, and a finish in the second round. He was worth the money if you were able to manage a way on Gillespie. And what I really liked about Gillespie was that even though he was fighting a taller fighter, he wasn't worried about staying in the pocket. He had really good straight punches and a great gas tank and was constantly moving from the body to the head to the takedown. Now, with Gillespie, though, Gonzalez is a much lower caliber of fighter, and Gonzalez landed that head kick six times. Any other fighter in the division, and Gillespie said it in there, like, oh, my training partners do that all the time. Guess what? Anyone else that's going to fight Gillespie is going to say, left head kick, coming right at you all day long. And there's way harder kicker than Gonzalez out there. So that's just a caution. If we have a good striker in there against Gillespie, careful for them knees and those kicks. How'd you feel that fight ended up going for you?
I think that's a perfect way to say it. I think it's a win in our little betting black book that we put an asterisk by him, and if he fights fighters that can lay any sort of kicks,
yep,
we
back off a little bit. We don't put so much money on it if not go the other way.
Because I think he's going
to
be a hype train on DraftKings, and I think this could pay off for the educated gambler. I think, and him just verbalizing it.
Yep.
Him verbalizing.
He told I get hit all the time in the head with kicks.
Why don't you tell everyone how to beat you?
Yeah,
why
exactly.
Why don't you point out your Achilles heel?
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought as soon as he said that as well. But he ended up taking shots. He's not thinking clearly in there. So just something to watch out for. Moving on, we had Anthony Smith defeating Hector Lombard, and I picked these guys both separately on DK. Obviously, Smith came through, and it was the gas tank. This happened in the third round. Lombard came out like a tank. This was when Canelo Triple G was going on, and we were so much more involved because we ended up watching the fights this weekend together. Involved in this fight that all of a sudden we're like, hey, is that other fight going on? And it was over, and we heard what went on there, and this delivered. I mean, it was night-night for Hector Lombard. It's see you later, Hector Lombard. Like, take a step away from combat sports.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Sorry, dude. Anthony Smith has really come into his own. He's much more strategic, where he used to be all power and just get in there and try to one-and-done people. And now he's started to really implement game plans. And his fighting style, his conditioning has definitely got better, which was something we really worried about. And he can carry that power into the third round. Anthony Smith, guy to watch out for next fights. He's got a lot. He's got some good potential.
I agree.
There.
I think Hector Lombard is a perfect way, a perfect rung to grab for me to have faith in you moving forward. I don't think it's a shallow win.
Yeah, like I agree. Some of these other fighters he earned it. We it was a about. Tough win. That was not an easy fight for him at all whatsoever. So it definitely, it's one
there
of those.
There will
fights.
Be no asterisks in our black book, is what I'm saying. Oh,
agreed.
This win.
Yeah, totally agreed. And with Anthony Smith, this is a fight that was grueling enough that he learned from it in the win. Where a lot of some guys steamroll and they don't learn anything, you get to see Anthony Smith definitely took a big step up here. Moving on to the main event,
he needs a good nickname because Anthony Smith is Lionheart, and boring.
Or it's Lion, isn't it? Yeah, it's Anthony Lion Smith.
Yeah, it needs to be something. Anthony Smith is a very boring name.
Yeah, I agree. Is two first names? No, Smith's not a first name.
No, it just seems it's Tony Smith. Anthony, it's if you were to pick just the most, it's in the common realm. He needs something exciting.
But he's Lion, and I would say then
Anthony
Tony
Lion
the Tiger.
Smith.
I would say Tony, but that's just nickname off of whatever.
But that would have been better than the Lion.
Yeah. The Lion in general, I feel like, is just a
if
Lion
If I'm crawling up through the UFC, I'm not taking anything that has to do with somebody, especially if they're a champ right now, I am crawling up. So I don't want to be Amanda Nunes. I don't want to steal her nickname.
Yeah, I could see that. Totally. So, with the main
and
event.
And hers makes sense.
The Lioness.
Yeah, uh-huh. The Lioness.
And she has kind of the hairstyle.
And Leon. Amanda Leon. Yeah, uh-huh. I think Leon, it's.
It works.
Yes, it's Lion Leon.
So, there was nothing that surprised anybody if you had listened to anyone else's breakdown. Luke Rockhold, superior in all forms and facets of that fight. And I don't like that people have been trashing Branch and tapping due to strikes on the ground. Because anybody who gave him shit would have tapped way before that.
Yeah, why? This is the other thing. We were just talking about throwing in the towel sometimes for your corner. Right. Sometimes, if your corner's not going to throw it in, why can't you throw it in for yourself?
You'll have fight
another
day.
You're not doing anything. I don't need to see you get knocked out on the canvas and potentially 2 years off your fighting career. I like Branch still. I think he's somebody to watch because he's going to be a sneaky F. And
I agree with that.
Yeah, I think everybody is underplaying how great Luke Rockhold's ground game is.
That's the current champ, other than that one hiccup he had as of late against Bisping, which goes perfect into, I guess, moving just where these guys go.
Yeah, but yeah. Branch, we both talked about it. To me personally, I think he knocked Luke Rockhold out on his feet for a second. And I was nervous.
He stunned him. I would agree with that. It was definitely.
And so I see a hole in Luke Rockhold's game. And the Rockhold Bisping, I would so much rather watch Rockhold Bisping than Bisping,
so, right, as we're saying, Branch still somebody who's going to end up making money for you later on against a lot of other fighters. Rockhold being the current champ was definitely worth every cent on DK. And with moving on in the division, where do they go? Rockhold is the obvious next title contender.
I don't want to see him fight Weidman right now.
Yeah,
Weidman doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, I agree.
His only win is Gastelum.
But either one of those fighters goes for the championship next. But with the era that we're in MMA right now, which is not a good era.
No, not the champion next, because we still have Whitaker.
Oh, that's right, the interim.
And Yoel Romero.
But so what's going to end up happening, what I'm seeing as of late, is recently GSP has started to say after this Bisping fight, I might be stepping away. And Bisping itself has said, hey, after this GSP fight, I might be stepping away too. Because he'd leave on a win and wouldn't have to face another murderer in Whitaker, Weidman, or Rockhold. And I think it's such a shitty way out. But he has had such a long career that at any time Michael Bisping wants to hang up the gloves, he's earned it. But it really just leaves the fucking entire weight class in such a shit position right now because of these ridiculous
this
fights they're making.
This is the perfect weight class that you have, that WWE style, battle royale. This is the weight class you do that
with. Yeah, it actually
so
started to get good.
Stars
it was bad for a while,
that.
But as of late.
But that upper echelon of GSP sliding in and fighting Bisping is holding up the entire division, in my opinion.
That's what I'm saying. It's made
crazy.
Such a shitty situation.
And I could be totally wrong, but I also feel like this is the division that set up the interim belt, or was that Jose Aldo with, I'm going to go play soccer? No, he got the belt right from McGregor handed to him.
Yep, and he didn't care. And with all the belt talk, DC officially was considered a no contest in his last championship bout versus JBJ. And what DC's doing, which is a class act more than anybody else, and we talked about it before already, was I'm willing to fight for it. Daniel Cormier.
I agree. That's where he's awesome, but I just thought of the next fight I want to see. I would like to see Weidman Branch. I think that's your next fight.
Ooh, that's a great fight. That's a great fight.
On a win at the caliber that, on the three losses, then the win against Gastelum for Weidman.
Uh-huh.
And then Branch on just the loss with Rockhold, and then coming in from his career from the other organization. I think that's perfect. Boom.
Yeah.
And I'm into it. Their ground games are, I think, on caliber with each other. That All-American wrestling. Fun.
It's really a good one. That's a great, great potential for next coming up bout for either one of those fighters. Anything else in the MMA verse? Anything else in the MMA world that we didn't talk about too much?
Scott Coker announced that he is going to introduce, and I think this is smart on Scott Coker's part. They're going to introduce the first female flyweight division.
Love it. Beating the UFC to the punch.
And perfect division to start with.
Yeah, it immediately turns into a feeder league.
You're not chasing just a one-star division. You can do both and have all. Jessica I, if she doesn't fight in the UFC after the fight versus PVZ, she walks right into this division. You can have your Angela. You can have all your 115 people that are walking out of Invicta that don't want to go backward.
Uh-huh.
Go right over. I love it. I think it's smart.
It is smart, and I got a 125 for you in case you need a champion. Valentina. Just saying. So the division's also up in the way at the 125 female division because the show's going right now, which we haven't really talked about the show. Roxanne Modafferi, there's a lot of other former UFC / up-and-comers. There's some good talent in there. Now I'm going to put up in a kind of a fight against my girl, but it does...
Bullet Valentina Shevchenko.
So it definitely...
We need that on a button, too, that we just have it say... Beep. Yeah, like bullet... Uh-huh. Bullet Valentina.
Or what if it was just a... And that's our bullet.
And it was...
That's a gun.
And then it was... Valentina! Hi!
So, definitely the 125 division to be watching on the Tough Series. They're fighting, and the winner of that season is actually the 125 champion. But we're going to have... We got quite a few fights coming up. We
Did
got
you
a long
by
weekend
any chance,
of fights.
See Brennan Schaub on Joe Rogan of recent?
Not of recent. I've watched too many of those. He's had him on there like twice a week for the last 3 weeks.
So Brennan was in like San Francisco doing a show, drove back to town on his way back to town, stopped by, I think, like Starbucks or something and got some like bullet coffee. And then he's like, can you put two shots in that? And they're like, I don't think you want to do that. He's like, I'm so tired, just add two shots of espresso
okay
to this coffee. They're like, sir, we never do that, you know, it's really high concentration.
Yeah, you're gonna have a heart attack.
He goes on Joe Rogan's show and he's sitting there and he's like, they're on the air and he's not really but it looked like the thing that like, oh, it's emergency situation.
Oh,
he
shit.
Just was like, your boy's about to shit his pants.
That's too funny.
He got like where you knew the hairs
flush.
On his face stood up,
he's
and he's like,
if I stand up, shit's going on.
Yeah, where
he
had to talk for a minute. Like, I can't.
I gotta think my way through
go.
Out of this.
Uh-huh. I can't just go. And Joe's like, go.
Yeah. He's
go
like,
go
you
to
don't understand.
Bathroom.
I can't move.
He's like, I gotta go. Eventually, he had to go and take a dump on air. And like, Joe just stayed on live.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know, like
yeah.
Joe does.
It's like taking a piss.
But he had to announce to everyone, I'm going to go take a poopy, you know, pretty much.
That's pretty
which
funny.
It was super funny. But then as the show went on, he's like, I'm about to throw up. Like, he fucked himself
damn.
Up. He said for, his new fiance walked in, and she said, I never seen you look so bad. He was sitting on the toilet.
Wow.
Trash can in his arms, shitting and puking at the same time. And all she said, your balls are hanging.
She's just watching underneath, just watching it.
Yeah, just watching
watching the Play-Doh factory go to work.
He's a mess.
That's funny. I love me a good poop story. Everybody's got them because everybody poops.
And before we get into this next card, if you guys aren't watching on Netflix, American Vandal, this shit, we've gone back and forth a few times and I haven't looked it up yet. It'd be very easy for me to find out. And I almost don't want to know until I finish the series if it's real or not. It's so close to documentary to being real and fake. And sometimes I think it's like, oh, this is real. And then other times I'm like, oh, all these people are fucking actors. And then I'm like, is it a reenactment of a real story that happened?
Is it a mocky-documentary?
Yes, and it's such a good show. It's cheesy as fuck.
Is it a Netflix original?
Yes. And it is so, it's about in a school in the teacher's parking lot, all the teacher's cars get spray painted with dicks.
Interesting.
And
so that's how it starts, right?
That they're like, if you went through all these kids and you had to pick out the kid who you thought spray painted the dicks, who would you pick? And it's the obvious one who you'd pick too. And he's going to be expelled. He's going to lose his college, blah, blah, blah. And these nerds in like the video department are like, we're gonna try to get to the bottom of this. We think he kind of was unfairly done.
Interesting.
So they go through this whole thing on who spray painted the dicks. Like, this teacher's vendetta against them, and all this, like, real life, like, somebody's parent cheating on somebody else's parent.
Oh, interesting.
It's ridiculous.
Well, we don't want to spoil too much of it, but it sounds like a show that I'm gonna definitely have to get into. One quick recommendation on another Netflix original is The Conspiracy Tapes. Unbelievable. They're about 30-minute episodes. You had turned me on to this, and I ended up watching most of them. It just goes into how our judicial system sometimes doesn't care about the facts, and it's what you
the
can prove in court.
The confession tapes.
Did I say that?
You said conspiracy tapes.
Oh, okay, sorry. The confession tapes. Absolutely riveting watch. There's just a ton of stories. It's not just one long season. It's more like a Rescue 911 back in the day show, one of those good ones. But anything else you have to watch?
It is interesting though, just to see the way people
get railroaded,
do false confessions, because you always think as a person sitting right now in your life, who would ever to confess
when you're awake for 72 hours?
Yeah,
you don't
without
fucking
water,
think straight.
Without shitting or peeing or anything.
You don't think straight. So that's the type of tactics that do go on around, just so you know, be educated so you don't get yourself in that situation. Lawyer up even if it makes you look bad, because you won't spend
always
time.
Get a lawyer. Yep. Just always get a
and
lawyer.
They
it's
always
100%
tell you,
of the time worth it.
They
just
always
don't
say,
even answer one question without a lawyer. Don't even say your fucking name. Just say, I want a lawyer. Right when the cuffs clink, I want a lawyer.
And that's one thing.
And then they can't even question you anymore without the lawyer, or all that goes right out the window.
Also, officers do tend to, or people of law tend to say, well, he got a lawyer. That makes him suspicious. F off.
Whatever.
F
that's
off.
That's the brainwashing they
set
up.
That's
so
exactly
you
what I was
going
to say. That's what I was going
to
say.
And even if you have to get a bullshit public defender, just still say, I want the lawyer.
Yep.
They'll
tell you, because people can be tricked into false confessions as much as being intimidated into them. So, definitely some good watches, but you know why we're all here. We got some fights coming up this weekend out of Japan. We have a Friday fight night, which is rare. We haven't had one of these in a long, long time. And we got a breakdown. So this is going to be known as UFC 117 Fight Night, OSP versus Yushin Okami, and this was a short notice replacement. We will definitely get there. A lot of fun fights on here. I feel like anytime we go to the Asias, we tend to have some funky fights happen, because there's some funkier styles out there, and there's a lot of money to be made on this fight night. Can't wait. We got DK lines up. And starting off the night, we have Dossie Abe versus Hyun-Gyu Lim. Abe is debuting in the UFC. He's definitely rudimentary in his striking and has won a lot of his fights as of late in the regional Japan scene against caliber fighters that are so much lower than Kim's level. The strikes that he was knocking stunning some of these guys were just incredibly slow, very weak jab. Heavy right hand, but that's about it that I saw for Abe. Ground game wasn't really there in most of his fights. He kept most of them standing, and that plays right into Lim's
hand. We have Abe coming in at 5'11", and Lim coming in at 6'2". Kim's also going to have the reach advantage just because he's taller, I believe. But we know what Kim comes to do. He's sprawl and brawl. His gas tank isn't worth much. But if you can get out of that first round, then you can beat him. Neil Magny, as of late, finished him 2 years ago because of that gas tank. And Mike Perry, as well, got in a complete brawl a year ago versus Lim. Lim walks to the middle of the ring, puts his head down, and throws uppercuts and hooks like nobody's business, puts everything into them. If those fights do, if they do go out of the second round, Lim really diminishes. But I just don't think Abe has it to get there. I don't think Abe can get him to the ground. I don't think he wants to get him to the ground. I think Abe is going to want to stick with him. I got TKO round one, Lim. He's going to be all over my DK. How you feel this one is going to go down?
I'm going to stick with the Lesbo and the Bean rule here, and I'm going to stay away from this fight.
Ooh.
If I were going to pick this fight, I actually have Abe KO round two.
Ooh.
I like Lim style at weigh-ins, and that has cost me so many fights. I just don't think he's won a notable decision in 3 years, or a notable fight in three years. So
against heavy punchers that are better than Abe. I just thought Abe wasn't nearly the Mike Perry level, even though some people say he is.
Mike Perry came out just like this, and we've seen Mike Perry hiccup since the Lim win. We've seen him get knocked out since then. Even though I think now Mike Perry's on point, and his showmanship, and we didn't even talk about that fight really. His showmanship and how amazing he is. I think everyone that's talking about Cody Garbrandt's the next one to watch. Cody comes off sounding chody in interviews. Mike Perry comes off sounding smart. He was super intelligent with the Robbie Lawler pick.
But he comes off chody.
But I think he comes off more of like that wrestling heel tool on purpose.
Yeah.
Like that's how I feel like he seems like he knows exactly what's
going on.
Yeah, instead of everybody mocking him, he's in on the joke.
Yeah, I agree.
Like,
I agree.
I feel like the whole part.
And that helps his entire
trajectory. Yeah, I like him. He's definitely a dude that will make me want to watch UFC if I weren't already. He would be like a guy that if I weren't super into fights, I'd watch Mike Perry fight.
I was thinking Usman Perry, but I'm thinking Perry on the ground. To Usman, that's a one-sided fight.
And I like both the guys so much and think they're both such a good investment for the UFC. Why? This is the mistake the UFC has made. Why squash two stars at once? Like, one rises and then you burn at one out?
Yeah,
Let them both climb up. Let them both keep murking guys. And so when they finally meet each other, it's like, oh, holy hell. How's this gonna go? But anyways, back to this fight. I'm kind of liking Abe for all the same reasons of Platinum Perry when he was first coming in.
Uh-huh.
I think he's explosive. I think the guys he's gone against had substantial enough records that they weren't just some hiccup. And every once in a while we see a shooting star. It's too early for me to call the hype train on this. But it might be one I'm jumping on for this fight. So I have Abe KO. More lack of faith in Lim that if you're showing me this hot prospect who just knocks out everyone he's faced and then you're showing me a guy who gets knocked out, that makes me nervous. So Abe KO round two. I'm going to probably stay away from this fight unless Abe is dirt cheap. I might put him on a few.
He's pretty cheap. The lines are out and Abe is a 7,800 on DK, making Lim around 8,500. Lim is actually 8'4". So, it's going to be
like
pricier.
I don't like either fighter for that price.
I think Lim's going to get a TKO early because that's the way he fights. And,
I think he does that stupid flashy shit where he tries
he
to be cool.
He'll do that.
And if you're doing that against somebody that...
Right down the pipe.
Yes.
And Abe
it's
does
the
do that.
Worst idea.
Abe does do that.
And Lim fighting on the bottom of this card, he's going to be desperate for making a statement in this fight, and that desperation will cause a mistake against a guy that just has explosive hands.
I do, like I said before, these Asian cards tend to have weird stuff happen, and it's I like what you're saying, and that play of stay away from the first fight of the night might be the best option in that. But moving on to the next fight, we have a preliminary bout at 170 pounds welterweight, Shincho Azin versus Luke Gemur. How would you pronounce that last name? Gimu?
Shinsho Anzai versus Luke Jimou.
And easier, we have the animal Anzai versus the Jedi. So the Jedi is coming in with a 12-3 record, being 5'11 and having a 72-inch reach. He is has all the check marks for me against the 31 years old 5'9, 69-inch reach animal. Animal is only fought three times in the UFC, I believe. He's coming off of like a 2-year layoff, falling out of his last bout due to a back injury. I believe that the animal is not UFC caliber of a fighter. He definitely got in shape for his last fight against Roger Zapata, but that TKO was a hand injury, and I went in back and watched that. I really like the athleticism and the animal coming in with a wrestling base. It's really good, but his striking is some of the worst striking you're ever going to see. Go back to that Zapata fight. He's throwing three jabs, and they're so far away that they're just gauging that right, but any good striker is going to come right over the top with that. And against a up-and-comer New Zealand fighter at 29 years old, I feel like all the way around, the competition level for the Jedi has been higher. He's coming off of a decision versus Dominic Steele, which that was a split decision, and I actually gave that fight to Steele, but that means that the Jedi realizes what he has to do in order to keep going, and I think that this is going to be a big growth spurt for Jimou. I think that he's going to end up getting a TKO round two, just because the Japanese fighters have a lot of heart and they don't give up on themselves. I could even move that to round one. I'm just heavily favoriting the Jedi right here. I think this, we might not see the animal too much more because it's just, they needed Japan guys. He lost his first fight and got a random injury. How do you feel that this one's going to go down?
I don't like that they're fighting in Japan, right?
Yes, they are.
And we don't fight in Japan all the time, and we don't know how
New Zealand's
much.
Not too far from Japan.
I understand, but how much do we trust their version of WADA, USADA, all their testing?
I agree. He did look muscular last fight compared to before.
I like Jimou. I just think UFC Dominic Steele isn't one of those guys that I'm like, damn, you went to a sketchy decision with Dominic Steele. So I'm going to pick Jimou decision, but I probably won't lay him heavily anywhere just because I think this is such a sketchy fight. It's such a sketchy fight to me.
The wrestling can come in for Animal, but it is one. I'm not going to go heavy on Jedi, but I know that I don't like what I see with Animal. That's the way I'm going to view that those two careers. I think Jedi.
And they're only 2 years different in age, and I like to 31, I feel like that's when a fighter is perfect. Like, uh-huh. That should be their perfect self. So, I do think we might see Jimou work his way into the UFC a little more, but I don't know if either fighter, I think both these fighters kind of fight this kind of card all the time, where it's Friday in the morning or Sunday in some island in the Pacific. Uh-huh. Fight card. I just don't know if either of them are ever going to be worth fighting guys that you know their name in the UFC.
Oh, uh-huh.
Moving on
to the next fight, we go to strawweight bout, 52 kilograms, or 115 for Simru Kondo versus Chai Mi Jiang. Jiang is the veteran here with having one bout against J.J. Aldridge and losing in a decision. She is 20 years old at 5'6". She's coming in against the veteran 28 5'5 fighter coming out of Japan in Kondo. Kondo is undefeated out of Pancrase in Japan. Only had one finish, most of them being decisions. She really tends to be kickbox heavy. And Gian is in that same boat. Gian is 5-1, her only loss being in the UFC. The youth is 20, and that is what really scares me for Gian, because you know that she's green. She hasn't had the longest career, where at 28, Kondo had a, I believe, Muay Thai, potentially kickboxing career prior to that. And I did watch some of the tape on Kondo. She takedowns, she has okay takedown defense, not much pop in her punches, but she does throw down the pipe. And Gion took a big step in J.J. Aldridge. J.J. Aldridge being a longtime Invicta champion and always contender. Gion, I think, really grew from that last fight because she understands UFC caliber. Kondo doesn't. Gion's coming in the UFC fighter when Kondo is coming in as the up-and-coming fighter. I think that this has decision written all over it. Both of these women are going to keep it kickboxing. There's not going to be a takedown ever. The ground game is going to be ultra sloppy for either fighter. I see a decision all the way, Gion. But I say stay away with a 10-foot pole. Don't even think about your DK cards with this. This could go split, be something. It's going to be low scoring regardless. What do you think is going to happen in this
one? I agree with you all the way around. You're not going to remember this fight after it's over with. It might be a fight like you make a sandwich.
Yeah. It's going to be a rough one, guys.
I think you're going to constantly be looking of like looking down at Gion in green. You're going to be like, okay, I'm going for the girl in green because you're not going to have any idea who's who in the ring. They have a similar style. Both the girls have gone against girls that are just house frows, like just moms off the couch. Like,
I think Kondo's has a fight. I really liked one of her fights, but it was the caliber of, it was just so,
people with 0-0 records.
Yeah.
People with 0-1 records.
Yep.
And, you know, good for both women. They're both there to put asses in the seats locally.
Yeah,
that's
agreed.
How I feel about
agreed.
It. I'm going to stay away from this all day. But I agree with you. I'm going to pick Gion decision purely because she's had a UFC fight.
Yep, even though it's
that's
a loss.
That's it. She even though it's a loss, I'm like, meh, okay. But I'm not going to stay. I'm going to forget this fight is even on it.
This card, DK. It's already scratched on DK. Don't even think about it.
Neither of them are going to even lay points that if they get the decision win,
it's going to be 15-15.
They're going to get like 37 points with a win.
If that. I think less than that. Both of them can actually have pretty low outputs as well. So, yeah, that's why. Moving on to the next fight, we have Juicy A Formiga at flyweight against Yuka Sakai. Sakai coming off of a big underdog win last against Justin Scoggins, but you know how we feel about Justin Scoggins. That's some of the worst fight IQ in the game right now. And Juicy A Formiga being a longtime contender in the division, having wins, coming off of a loss as of late, Formiga against Ray Borg, who's the title contender, and then previous to that, beating a Dustin Ortiz, who is also mixing in that top 15 division. But Formiga is 19-5. He's going to come in with a 6-inch gap, where Sakai, being an ultra tall 5'11 with a 71-inch reach, Formiga only having a 66-inch reach. This fight is going to be wrestling heavy for Formiga. Formiga tends to go in there and really do well with the wrestling, and that's how he gets a lot of his decision wins. Couple knockouts and some submissions in there. Sakai was getting all sorts of picked apart by Justin Scoggins, who's, I believe, also lost to Formiga via guillotine choke. But what I liked about Sakai in this fight is that even though it was the third round and he had gotten the living shit kicked out of him, he still went for that finish and got it. And that's the type of fighter who is never going to give up. I really like the heart of Sakai, but I think that this is going to be too big of a step up in competition. I feel like Formiga could get the submission here. I think Formiga is going to go directly for the takedowns. I feel like Sakai can be exploited there, even though he's so long. Against a lot of youthful fighters, Sakai is going to give them trouble, but he's a stick figure. I mean, him and Justin Scoggins was like two scarecrows going at each other. It was nuts. All veteranship. I think Formiga's better in all the places other than the range. I even give the power to Formiga a little bit more. So, Formiga decision for me. What do you think's going on with this one?
I have Formiga decision as well. My question is, how much is Formiga on DK?
Let me pull that up for you real quick. Formiga, I feel like, is going to be a heavier favorite. He's the second most expensive at $9,200.
Not worth it.
Agreed. Not at all. This is a decision fight with holding top position for three rounds. Sakai can be exploited there. So
Sasaki.
Sasaki, sorry. He's $7,000. he has the flash potential of catching something. I just don't think it's like
it's not gonna be Formiga. Formiga's one of those guys that he's gonna be forever a top 10, and because even his losses, it happened to be like Henry Cejudo is a hot cold fighter, and it happened to be a hot night for Henry Cejudo when he won. And who else did he lose to? Ray Borg on Ray Borg's climb. I think that was the one fight Ray Borg made weight for.
Yeah, I think you're right on that.
Or no, he missed weight and had to give 20% of his purse.
But he still won. But yeah. And put money on Borg on that. His other, as of late, Formiga, split decision to Henry Cejudo. So for that's like, yeah, I think that
his caliber is so much higher than Sasaki. Sasaki is there to put asses in the seat. Formiga decision for me, it depends on how hard Sasaki's heart is, because Formiga's also got good cardio. Yep. So I could see him ground and pound finish in the end of round three. Depending on how much money I end up at the end of my cards is whether or not I will put Formiga on at 9-2.
Agreed. Moving on, we have Kenta Nakamura versus Alex Morono. This is an interesting bout. We have another longtime Japanese fighter. He has a few fights in the UFC. Last coming off a loss decision to Zaleski. Prior to that, having a win over Kyle Nope. And in that Nope fight, Nakamura was all sorts of trouble multiple times and ended up getting a flash submission, rear naked choke. Nope really gassed at that point as well, but he just shows that I feel like Japanese fighters to me are the Mexicans of the Asias, if that makes sense. Like, it's all heart. They know how to fight. I also lived in Japan for a little bit and saw that warrior mentality, and the little fighter for them is the regular. For them, a 135er is the 170 of their population. If that makes sense. Like, the 135, everybody's 135. Yeah, they're a big guy at 135, 140. So Nakamura being 5'11", also having a 1-inch reach advantage over the 5'11 Morono. I've been flipping back and forth on this. Morono has a couple key wins. His last fight being a TKO over Price, that was overturned. I don't know if Morono ended up popping for steroids. I can't remember. That was 7 months ago, but that was scratched for some reason. Prior to that, him beating Mutazuri and also being Kyle Noakes, so they both have a win over that same competitor. Nakamura being 33 and Noakes being 27, the age, I think Morono's getting in his stride and Nakamura's more holding, trying to hold on to his position. I feel like he's a local guy who's brought in to keep asses in the seats, as you said it before, which in Japan, it makes sense that they have a bunch of Japanese versus the world fighters. I love that angle that UFC takes with it. And I had Nakamura earlier in the week, but the more I look into this and the more I see it, I feel like Nakamura likes to grind, have grinding bouts, and Morono does the exact same thing, but potentially better and with a better gas tank. I'm going to switch this to a Morono decision. I had Nakamura getting a flash submission like he did before, but I think Morono's coming into his own in this spot, and this is going to be a grappling heavy fight. I could see Morono being on a couple DK cards, but he's not sticking out too much. I think this is a decision all day. How do you feel this is going down?
Agree with you. I have Morono decision all day. Something that I'm looking back at my cards, and I might play a DraftKings card or two of hometown favorites, because we see sketchy judges, and I, off the top of my head, can't recall if Japanese judges are honorable. I cannot recall that.
Yakuza and Pride. Just throw that out.
I'm looking back, and I have the decision against all the hometown people right now. And I'm even looking at that girl fight being like the Kondo versus Jian. I feel like I want to switch it to Kondo. If it's close enough where it's boring enough that we think it's going to be, then I can see them just giving it to Kondo. If we see anything close here, they're going to give it to the hometown person. So I'm going to switch the Kondo over purely because I think it's going to be close enough. Why not give it to the hometown girl in Japan? Why not give it to the Japan girl?
You're going back on that previous fight.
Yes. Okay. I'm going. Okay. I was looking back at all of them. The Formiga, that decision, I'm hoping he pulls it out enough that it would be sketchy for the judges to give it to Sasaki. So I'm going to keep that one. The Nakamura Moreno, so that brings us back to this fight. oh, is it going to be a close enough decision that they could give it to the hometown guy? And not just a hometown guy, but their hometown friggin', like, their Stipe. Like, a pretty big deal there. So it makes me, Morona is not a big enough deal that if he gets a sketchy decision pulled, no one's going to be up in arms about it on social media in the next day. No one's even going to remember the fight, especially the prelim card. So I am purely going politics on this. I don't see Nakamura getting knocked out here. I'm just going to pick him to have a sketchy decision.
Split decision. I like it. I like it. I like it. It's real. That's rational. That makes sense. It's not just up in the air, especially as of late when we've seen some nasty calls out there. Moving on to the main card. And by the way, all these fights are on FFX or FXX or I don't know what the hell. You're going to have to find it online some way. It's going to be easier to find than the pay-per-views. So at least we have that to look forward to. On the main card starting off, we have Charles Rosas versus Misoto Hirota. Hirota also, I feel like, is put into the UFC because there was a couple Japanese fights a few years ago and they needed local fighters. And Hirota, his most notable win was against Cole Miller. He had a split decision over Ishihara, and Ishihara has kind of not done as much as he used to. But when they had that Ultimate Fighter, they gave all those guys contracts up in that part, and they fight him out of there in the world. Charles Rosas also being a UFC show alumni, also being a top contender in his division. He's been spotty in the UFC, win one, lose one. He's 11-3. It's the only time he's really been losing, and I feel like people are starting to find a way to exploit Charles Rosas' lack of power, and at times having questionable intention or thoughts in there where he just goes to different stuff. But as I was saying with Hirota, I don't think he's UFC caliber. I think that Rosas is better all the way around, other than lacking in the power and potentially the IQ. Hirota is a somewhat of a veteran at 18-8. He's definitely doesn't have too many more fights to win in the UFC. So at 36 years old, I feel like he's on the way down, but he wasn't ever too high up to begin with. So I think Rosas he can win in all positions. He can even get a submission, I feel like, because that's where he likes to really start to go down to the takedowns. And I think that this is also going to go to the ground and be more of a grappling fight. But I see Rosas passing a lot more, being so long. The Japanese fighters don't have the type of length that Rosas can give unless they're getting other guys out there. So I got Rosas' decision. I can even move this to a submission round 3, round 2. Decided favorite for me in my eyes for Rosas. What do you think's going on with this one?
I have Rosas' submission round 3 as well. Here's my politics of it.
All right.
He just had a hurricane. He had to travel a long fight. He is win one, lose one. He's never really stepped up either for me. Really, for Rosa, it's his gym all day I'm going with here. I just think American Top Team practice is harder than any fights Hirota has had in the UFC.
Exactly.
So I'm going to go with Rosa purely on experience in the gym. Rosa, submission round 3. He needs this fight.
Yep.
To make any sort of name for himself at this point forward in the UFC.
Yeah, it is tough because it's hard with a win one, lose one. But yeah, the caliber of fighters still, even though Hirota got that nasty split decision over Miller, Miller was on his way out. Rosas is, by the way, going to have a 2-inch reach advantage where he tends to have a little bit longer of a reach against most guys because at featherweight, I don't remember if I ended up saying that, at featherweight, at 5'9", it's pretty tall for that 125 division. So just something to look out for. Moving on to the next fight, we have Tento Ishihara, Alpha Male Strong, versus Rolando Dai. Dai's coming off of a loss in his debut out of the Philippines against Alex Caceres, but that ended up being a doctor stoppage because of it was an eye poke. Dai was on his way out regardless. That was just a freak doctor stoppage. Ishihara coming off of a loss to Gray Maynard 2 months ago, where it was just wrestling-based loss. And then prior to that, losing to Artem Lobov. Ishihara is going to end up having a half an inch reach discrepancy against 5'9 die. This is also a featherweight bout. From what I've seen on Twitter and YouTube, Ishihara is starting to work on his work game. Alpha Male said, hey, guess what? If you can get out wrestle, it's never going to happen again. I feel like Tento even put out stuff of like, fuck wrestling, something bitches, and showed him grappling with some high caliber D1 wrestlers. Dai doesn't have that out of the Philippines. Dai has some good striking, but Gas Tank does tend to fold. I feel like that eye poke was a way out without a loss against Caceres officially, even though... Or a doctor stoppage. I guess they did counter the loss. But I just see Ishihara not having the striking advantage because he is very looping in his strikes, even though they have a lot of power. They have a lot of power because he throws them from the outside. He throws them like a big looping fastball. And Dai can beat him to the punch, even hurt him and get him on the ground. But if Dai decides to go to the ground at all, I feel like Ishihara is going to end up using that ground game, using that Alpha Male. The Team Alpha Male Japan... You're right, Faber's talked about it a bit as well. Like, they got high-level guys going out there and working on... Japan also has also had a long-time wrestling scene. Ishihara, that's where I feel like this is also going to be a ground-heavy fight if Ishihara is smart. I got Ishihara in this. I feel like he's going to be too expensive, though, for what he's shown me as of late, so I don't think I'm going to play him heavy. But Dai might have a play in here because he throws straight punches that are pretty hard. I think Ishihara could take it. He's getting those type of punches against his Alpha Male counterparts. What do you think this one's all about?
How much is Ishihara on DraftKings?
Ishihara is going to be a by the way, Rosas was 8-8, so he's a pretty big favorite. Ishihara being 8-7 against Dai. Dai being a underdog 7,500. Against, and Hirota was 7,400.
For me, if I have to make the decision of putting Ishihara or Rosa on a card, I'm picking Ishihara here. I know he hasn't shown a lot of lately, but I think his character, as far as the entertainment of UFC, I want to call this a gimme fight for him. I feel like he is there to explode. He's an Alpha Male guy. He's a hometown favorite. We know Alpha Male's company men as far as the UFC is concerned. This is set up for Ishihara KO round one.
Ooh. That might be a play. That might be a good play to get up. I like where your head's at because he throws them heavy when he does. Moving on to the next fight, we have Gokhan Saki debuting against Henrik Frankenstein da Silva. If you've listened to the show at all as in the last while, you know how I feel about da Silva. One of the worst fighters in the UFC. Horrible gas tank. He is fighting at the light heavyweight division at 205, and he should be a 185 or 170. Remember, all of a sudden I triggered something in your head, didn't you? When I was like, oh yeah, he's stick legs on a belly with no gas tank. If he gets to 185, he will have cardio for days. This is a big of a promotional debut that you can get on a main card as far as... being on a poster. He's coming in. Gokhan Saki's past, real quick, is one loss like 13 years ago in MMA when he didn't really know what he was. He was like, oh, this is a fight that you can take to the ground, okay, whatever.
13 years ago.
Yeah.
One fight 13 years ago.
In MMA. Gokhan Saki is a K-1
no striking gym.
He doesn't do it. Yeah, I feel like the UFC is grooming him, though, against da Silva. Da Silva coming off three losses in a row, being pretty dramatic finishes. 33 years of age for Gokhan Saki, and da Silva being 28. 6 foot for Gokhan Saki, and 6'4 for da Silva. The striking ability 100% goes to Gokhan Saki, and Henrik da Silva thinks that he's a quality striker as well. He does have a Muay Thai base. With just such a bad gas tank, for the first 30 seconds he's dangerous, but I feel like Saki, or Gokhan Saki, is gonna be able to take any type of striking advantage. And in 13 years he's gotten a little bit better at his takedown defense. He's talked about it a bit, like, oh, I understand what MMA is now, and he's worked on it much better. But I don't think that da Silva has the takedown ability to take down a Gokhan Saki or most people at all. The reason that he won those few first fights, da Silva, in the UFC is because the horrible gas tanks of his opponents let him unbelievably get there. Go Kamsaki, TKO round one. He's a heavy favorite. It's debut. This is a ridiculous bet. I'm not going to bet this anywhere because Henrique is the UFC caliber fighter here by far. By far, he has, if we are going to use somebody else's experience to pick against Kondo, as I did earlier, we had a switch, but Go Kamsaki should be the decided underdog, but he's a heavy favorite for a TKO because of what I said. Bad takedowns for Da Silva, amazing stand-up for Gokhan. TKO round one in my eyes. What do you think is going on with this one?
Oh my gosh. This fight is kind of a crazy shit show. Yeah. And the how much fights that Da Silva's been in this year is crazy. Who's fought more than this guy that we're not talking about? Agreed. That is a crazy amount of fights. Brutal fights, knockouts, all just thrown into one. I just feel like his coaches, his camp, his somebody pissed in the wrong Cheerios at the UFC, and they are just like, you know what? We're going to give you a monster. And because we're fighting out of Japan, this monster can put any needles in his veins that he wants to. And he's going to come out hard, and he's going to come out fierce. And we always say straight punches beat looping punches. I think that's what you're going to see here. Yeah. I think it's going to be a quick murder, Saki KO. I think no TKO here. KO round one.
Dead. We're going to see a dead body in there.
And I think he might be worth it putting on your DraftKings. I think this whole entire night is you're going to have to spread your picks out because it's such a shit show of a card, honestly. It's a shit show of a card.
I agree.
I feel like this card is built for the arena. It's just for the people that are coming to the fight. It's we're going to see like the decision. Now we have to see something crazy knockout, and that's what Saki is there for.
So, with the odds right now, Saki is the 8-6 favorite over Henrique. Henrique being one of the lower guys at 7-6. I just don't see that at all happening. So, moving on to the next fight. I feel like we have one of the most lopsided fights of the entire fight here, even though Gokhan, that last fight is pretty dang lopsided in my eyes. We have Takanori Gomi, longtime Pride veteran, UFC veteran as well, coming off a 4-fight losing streak against Dong Hyun Kim. Dong Hyun Kim coming off of his last win over Brendan O'Reilly. Notable, he has a loss in one of the fights of the year versus Polo Reyes, prior to that also being knocked out to Dominic Steele. That Reyes fight is something that is just what legends are made of. And Kim is going to ride that high for a long time. Kim comes in the middle of the ring, goes to stand, and bangs hard. Gas tank isn't necessarily there, but that's because he throws heavy punches all three rounds. He has power into all three rounds, but he's live by the sword, die by the sword. He's willing to get finished. And I think that the UFC likes that. Even if you lose, if you're 1-1, it doesn't matter. You get paid more. UFC likes that. The only thing that happens, though, is you can't do that for your entire career because it ain't going to work out. Takanori Gomi is key. Well, that's what he was. He's a longtime wrestler coming off of a long wrestling career moving into Pride. He had one-punch knockout power. Had it is the key word there at 39 years old in that 4-fight losing streak. He's 10 years older than his predecessor. He's also 5 inches shorter at 5'11 to 5'8. And he has a 0.5 reach disadvantage against Kim. All we've seen in his last 4 finishes or losses for Gomi is people take him down and knock him out or land a punch or somebody opens a door or somebody farts across the ring and Takanori Gomi goes out. His chin is absolutely done. There is no way he wins this fight.
Just the
at
mere
all.
Thought of Jessica Andrade fighting in the octagon after him, knockout.
He knockout. Just as Bruce Buffer turns to him with the cards, dumb. He's gonna fall to the ground, and you're gonna see another dead body. I think this is a setup fight.
But you know what Nomi is? Hero in Japan.
Exactly.
Puts butt in the seat.
Since Pride, he was one of their staples.
You want to have someone knock him out? Fight. Who do you have knock him out? You have the South Korean kid knock him out.
The racist. If you want to talk about racism in the Asian parts of the world, Koreans versus Japanese, notorious one of the nastiest things ever, and it's so unbelievable. I learned it once I got there that Japanese people like Japanese people. That's about it. Hey, they got a tiny island where they do what they need.
I got Kim KO round two
one.
Here.
I got round one.
I'm moving it up to round one. Yep. I think for all those reasons, how much is he on DraftKings?
I'm going to have him on all my cards. This is one of those guys that I definitely recommend. I think he's going to be highly favorited. And he is a 9-1. I think he's worth every cent.
All right, me too. I'm going to have Kim on things.
Ooh. So, moving on to the co-main event of the night, we have Claudia Gadelha at strawweight versus Jessica Andrade. Jessica Andrade coming off of her last loss against Joanna champion Jezza Jezic, was definitely a spirited 5-round decision. Andrade has really stepped up in a lot of her fights as of late. She was a highly touted prospect. She's got power, good ground game, and in my eyes, Claudia Gadelha is the number two. JJ isn't in this division. Claudia Gadelha is the current champ. And Claudia Gadelha is going back for that number three fight. And she's taking on top competitors as of late, submitting Carolina Kovacevic and also defeating Courtney Casey in a decision. Gadelha only having two losses in her 15 or 17 fights to the champion. All the way around, Gadelha is a little tank. Andrade is a little tank. I do give the power advantage to Andrade. The height discrepancy is going to be an inch for Gadelha at 5'3", and the reach is only going to be an inch and a half for Gadelha. I do give the striking advantage, as I was saying, to Andrade, but I feel like Gadelha has good takedowns and can get Andrade down. Andrade has okay takedown defense, but she hasn't really seen the Gadelha style, because Gadelha really started to get to JJ, and JJ has amazing takedown defense. The gas tank wasn't all the way there for Gadelha, but there's a 3-round fight, which plays. I do think Andrade also fades a little bit more. If they do decide to go to the ground, this is a Gadelha fight all day, anywhere. She can be on her back and get a submission, or reverse it and get a TKO finish. I think that, like I was saying before, the only people beating Gadelha is a champion, and this is just a tough spot. She is the Benavidez of the 125 division against Demetrius Johnson right now.
She's
in my
the
eyes.
Daniel Cormier.
Exactly. So I have Gadelha decision. I don't know. I think I'm going to play Gadelha, because I think that she is going to get takedowns and a lot of ground and pound. She moves a lot more. Her gas is there. What do you think is going
on? What's our DK cost on this?
She's going to be a little bit higher. But I think that she's going to end up being one of the... I think the takedowns are going to play heavy in this. She's 9,000 even against Andrade's 8,000.
I love JJ. I think Claudia Gadelha versus JJ is the scariest match for Joanna, and I think she knows it. I think for Andrade, the thing JJ does, as crisp as her striking is, she didn't lay any of her elbows against Andrade. She didn't lay any knees, barely any kicks. It was more of a piece apart, peppered fight. She just peppered her. She peppered her. You know who's not going to pepper? Gadelha. You know who has heart? I would say equally as hard. Everyone's given Andrade all this credit. You know who wobbled JJ as well?
Yep.
Gadelha.
And
Gadelha lays nasty damage.
Yep.
It is not... She controls the ground easily. She controls the takedowns easily in this fight. The forward style of Andrade just plays into everything. The only thing we have to worry about with Gadelha here is the punch she can take. The amount of punches she took in the 5 rounds against JJ with zero gas tank at the end, she'll be fine against Andrade. I got Gadelha here all day. I even think we could see a late submission, because the peppered fight of walking forward for Andrade is the easiest movement you can do in the UFC, is walking forward as a fighter. The hardest movement you can do in the UFC is defend a takedown, to me personally.
Yeah.
So, and
yeah.
I don't know Dick. I'm just out here, yeah, like, just judging from the outside. You know who's going to make you to defend takedowns for an entire fight? Gadelha. So I think Claudia wears Andrade out, even though Andrade, everyone's like, oh, well, she went 5 rounds with JJ. Yeah, and so did Claudia, and Claudia took her down in round four. You know, even though JJ got right back up, Claudia was still there. I like where Claudia is going with her entire game. I got her submission round 3. This should be the main event. This should be the main event of the night. This is the only fight that gets me to turn on this weekend if I'm a Fly By Night fan. There's nothing else really exciting happening on this card to me except this fight.
I think there's going to be some definitely internet clips going around of people going night-night all night long. But there is some really weird ones on here. And this one ended up falling out, as I was saying earlier. We have, at the main event, OSP versus Yushin Okami. A lot of people are wondering why Yushin Okami got in here all of a sudden. Shogun, who ended up falling out due to an injury of some sort. The reason Yushin Okami got this fight, even though he's coming in out of WPF, whatever the new organization is, he was a longtime UFC title contender. Notorious alliance with Chael Sonnen, lost his first fight ever against Chael, realized he needed to go to the Pacific Northwest. Yushin Okami has been a Team Quest and just an ever-evolving Japanese mentality type of fighter. He also had all the passports, is what I was going to get at. That's why he's on this bout, is because they needed somebody, and they needed somebody in Japan, the fan favorite, and they put him in there against OSP. And I feel like a lot of people are coming in on OSP because they see that the potential, his last win as of late, being against who do we got? De Lima in a Von Flue choke. OSP being the only fighter ever to have two Von Flue chokes. I think he's calling it the Von Prue choke or some bullshit. But he's coming off of a 20-10 record. OSP coming out of Knoxville Martial Arts. We have only a 2-year discrepancy for Okami. Okami, I feel like, has been on the top level, even though OSP has a fight against John Jones. I feel like Okami, at 34-10, has 14 more fights, and it's proven. It comes in with that heavy wrestling, good striking, southpaw. OSP also is going to end up having the 1-inch reach advantage, but he's going to end up having a 8-inch reach advantage in striking OSP. But OSP is somewhat one-dimensional. I know people always tout that he's a prospect and an athlete, and that's about it. He goes for 2 minutes, and then you know what you're getting. He has heart, as in he's not going to just tap out due to conditioning problems, but OSP, notoriously horrible gas tank. Nothing you're going to see new. He's not a prospect. He has a couple finishes against very low-ranked fighters, and a lot of people have been calling Okami gone and out of this fight, or out of the fight game. His chin, all that, but he was the old breed that didn't change. I feel like Okami has made those changes, turned into much more grappling centric, and I had OSP earlier. I was buying in all his bullshit hype, all that power, all this and that. Yushin Okami has power. Guess what? Yushin Okami also has a very sneaky ground game and good takedowns for Japanese fighters. Chael Sonnen and other people like will say Yushin Okami was the only Japanese fighter coming out of Japan that actually decided to leave Japan long ago because he understood that Japanese, you couldn't just stay there. I got Okami actually in a decision, if not a submission in the later rounds. This is a 5-rounder. I could see Okami even getting a submission in round 4 or 5. So Okami, huge underdog. I broke it down to myself here, and I do think Okami gets this on the ground all day. OSP's just, we know he's going to gas, and that's what I'm counting on.
This is two blasé fighters going. It's a blasé fighter versus a blasé fighter. What's going to be the give here? Heart. And Okami has that all day. I agree with you on an Okami decision. I don't know if it's because I cannot deal with OSP. I just think he's kind of, I don't like to call fighters garbage, but I think he's past his rung in this sport. The decision to John Jones was the worst John Jones we ever seen, even just down to his pot belly. That's the only fight he tested clean on.
It's the only fight that John Jones ever took without having a full camp. And most of the time, John Jones was notoriously known for being like, I'm not going to fight you on 2 weeks' notice because they're too good of fighters. He knew OSP's not that good of a fighter, that he could take them with no training and win. And it turned out to be one of the first fights ever.
I'm not a Jimmy Manoa dick rider at all. So getting knocked out to me by Jimmy is like, oh, that just says another, you're one-dimensional with your strikes. You just went against this, you know, guy with pretty, like, 101 boxing skills and just got knocked out. I just think this is Ovin St. Preux filled something for the UFC that he's no longer needed for anymore. something I'll talk about with the hurricane shit going on, still going on with Maria. He has to have loved ones in Haiti still, just to be in his head a little bit. Long flight, all this. This one's for the fans. This is so they can walk out. I think it's not going to be a surprise to me, but I'm going to have Okonami decision. I even think he could finish it.
That's what I'm thinking in the later rounds because of everything you said. I was wondering if we were going to end up getting another one, if we were going to 2 weeks in a row without an underdog. And this is a big underdog on top of being a main event, which is pretty tough. I mean, I'm seeing here on tap that 88% of people think that Okami, and I feel like OSP also being the 9-5, it's all hype, people. It's all hype. That Von Fluchoke isn't going to happen against Okami.
No.
Guaranteed. Guaranteed. And we know that OSP has, he has a left kick and a right. That's all he has. Okami's going to be on a lot of my cards because I think he can drag it into that deep water. He's going to be 7-6 at the cheapest. So that's where he's going to allow me to get all of the fighters I want, like Kim. I think Rosas at 8-8 is a little too overpriced for me. But
Gedalia.
Gedalia is definitely on there. Gokhan Saki at 8-6 because I feel like against Da Silva. But that also, that shortens me up. Then, interesting.
Follow us on Twitter at Lesbo and the Bean if you want to stay up to date on all the Bean's latest picks in his DraftKings cards. And for all things Lesbo and the Bean, if you're chasing our feed this week, because it might be hard, people. Everyone's dealing with iOS updates, hurricanes galore, power surges, but we're going to get it to you. So follow us at lesboandthebean.com.
Lesbo and the Bean!